Dallas's Tim Kalashaw will be joining us in 15 minutes here on 95.7 The Game as we really get breaking down what is coming to Levi's Stadium this weekend. We got 49ers. We got Cowboys. Again, two teams that have been very good all year, that have very good defenses, have very good offenses, and this is quite a well-balanced matchup. Say it with me, kids. This is a great matchup. At least on paper, going into this game, it's got the potential to be very even punching power on both sides of the ring here. So, Tim Kalashaw coming up in just a little bit. Just to get back to Lamar for one more point here, that the other thing the Ravens have going for him, Ray, is it seems like Lamar's number one point of negotiation isn't necessarily the salary itself or the years committed to him. It's a 100% guaranteed contract. So he's basically looking for the one thing he's not likely to find on the open market, which means reuniting in Baltimore becomes, I think, even more of a reality. If his real priority is, I want a 100% commitment, I don't think he's getting it from anyone.
That's probably true.
Or it's the only great way to go ahead and scoop him up.
I think it probably is. That's where I was going to go with this, is if Deshaun Watson, with the amount of baggage that he carries around with him, got a fully guaranteed deal, A, that's what Lamar Jackson was inspired by, and B, there's an owner out there who needs a quarterback badly enough that he's going to say, you know what? The seal's been broken on this. Let's do this. I mean, it just seems to me like, say whatever else you want about Deshaun Watson, and there's plenty to say. He did
Wax may or may not be involved.
Yes. He did a huge service for his fellow quarterbacks now and in the future, because he won't be the last one to get the fully guaranteed deal.
Isn't there almost an element of collusion that players could actually bring forth if we didn't see another 100% guaranteed contract for someone sometime soon?
No question. Problem is, you got to come up with the paperwork. And based on the collusion incidences in baseball, owners have learned, don't leave stuff lying around.
Maybe this is the Daniel Snyder revenge tour we're hoping for.
Actually, it was kind of interesting because now the new rumor about the Commanders is that they're going to sell to the guy who owns the Sixers, which is
I heard that Bezos is still going to come in last minute here with the official number. That so Daniel Snyder hates Bezos, hates him,
yes,
and does not want to sell to him probably more than anyone else, but he also wants $7 billion. And if no one's willing to go $7 billion, and then all of a sudden he walks in with $7 billion, you're going to hate him less.
Maybe, but Danny Snyder is a vengeful little weasel.
He is.
And I could see him doing what Chris Cohan did to Larry Ellison, which is use him to drive the price up and then sell to somebody else, even if it's not the top bid. Because Joe Lacob's group did not have the top bid for the Warriors. I mean, it was significantly lower than the one Ellison was coming up with. But Chris Cohan hated Larry Ellison, so he used him to drive the price up and then hosed him at the last minute, even though he left money on the table to do it.
Well, but the thing is that, I mean, you're right about all that, but Joe Lacob showed up with cash in hand. Get this done. You know, we're not financing this bad boy. Here you go.
Ellison wasn't financing either. Ellison was worth $46 billion then. He could have paid that out of petty cash.
But he never put that on the table. He tried to, he was playing finance games. He was playing games that Joe Lacob said, so I know I don't have the pile of money, but what I do have is the entire pile to give you right now.
Well, except that he had investors to do that for him, where Ellison was walking in.
But no, Ellison never said, here I am, 100% cash on the table offer. And that opened the door for Lacob to sort of side door the entire process.
He also got to side door the process because Cohan wasn't going to sell to Ellison. It wasn't about Ellison being reluctant. It was about the fact that he talked to him about it, you know, kept grinding out ways to put it off, then got the other deal done on the side, and then undercut Ellison at the last minute.
Since we're talking about owners, I want to bring something up before we get right back into the divisional round with Tim Kalishaw coming up in about 10 minutes. Did you notice that the Los Angeles Chargers today, instead of cleaning the house, only decided to sweep the front porch? Brandon Staley remains as head coach. Joe Lombardi, their offensive coordinator, quarterback coach Shane Day were basically the fall guys. And let me just tell you what the very first thing I thought of. I'm wondering if you thought of the same thing, too. With Harbaugh now officially returning to Ann Arbor, that puts a higher price tag on Sean Payton. Payton, because he likes being a quarterback whisperer, probably was by default interested in a San Diego opening. Or, excuse me, Los Angeles opening. But because Harbaugh exited the conversation to go back to Ann Arbor, now Payton becomes probably the number one target of an owner with the Denver Broncos. You will simply not outbid. No one will outbid. Look at it this way. Stan Kroenke has his own independent wealth and a portion of the Walton wealth. The vast majority of the Walton wealth owns the Denver Broncos. So you're not outbidding him for anything, which means the price of Sean Payton probably just went up. Sean Payton even said yesterday, I'll consider the Texans. So he is making his own price go up. And what the very first thing I thought of is what we have here with Brandon Staley is we have typical cheap Dean Spanos trying to take the easy way out. I'll fire the coordinators, I'll keep the coach, and we'll replace mid-level executives instead of wiping out my coach's office to get into the highest bidding war ever for Sean Payton services.
I'm not sure that what they did today eliminates them from the Payton discussion. The thing that's only going to eliminate them from the Payton discussion is the fact that Rob Walton might give Payton $25 million a year and full control of the franchise. He could have full control of the franchise in Los Angeles.
Well, Telesco's there, right?
Yeah, but they could move him out. They could move Staley out.
Here's the thing. Telesco's actually done a decent job. They just couldn't stay healthy.
Yeah, but if you want Sean Payton bad enough,
sure,
you'll fire a good guy to get him. Because, let's face it, this is label shopping for owners. If Dean Spanos thinks he can get Sean Payton, Telesco's gone yesterday, and Staley's gone the day before that.
But unless, of course, Payton is looking at this saying, you know, I'd be happy to work with the general manager who I think is, you know, if he's got a level of respect for Telesco, maybe he says, I will work with that guy, as long as I have final line sign-on, you know, final veto power.
Maybe, maybe not. I don't know Sean Payton well enough to know how power-hungry he is. But I do know he made most of the decisions in New Orleans with Mickey Loomis. As
I was about to say, he had a GM.
But he was a GM that was basically an ottoman, so he could stand up and change the light bulbs. He could insist on basically any structure he wants. And if Dean Spanos thinks that's the thing that makes the Chargers less laughable, he'll do that.
Whole thing sounded cheap to me, though. It really did. Whole thing sounded cheap to me. And, you know, you can take the Chargers out of San Diego, but you can't take Dean Spanos' hand and find his wallet in his back pocket.
Well, but I think he doesn't fire Staley not because he's wedded to him, but because he doesn't have his hands on Payton yet. If Sean Payton calls Dean Spanos or his agent calls and says, hey, let's talk business, and it's something that fires Dean Spanos' imagination, Brandon Staley is fired tomorrow. It just happens. You know, he didn't change his contract any. He didn't give him an extension.
He can go to Thailand.
Yeah, he could. Well, that country's already taken. Cliff Kingsbury.
Just you know that he's going full on probably things you shouldn't do in Thailand vacation, right?
I think he's making himself unavailable for the better part of a year till a good college job comes up.
It's smart. It's a smart way to play it. Take all that money that you've made.
And the money that they still owe you.
And go away with it. Disappear. Let rumors of your existence create the mystery around you yet again. And literally have fun with, I don't know what Cliff Kingsbury went to Thailand for, but if he went there for dirty things, he can find them.
I'm gonna take the safe road and say he went to Thailand because it's a fun place to go, and let it go at that. But
lovely beaches.
In terms of San Diego, I mean, in terms of the Chargers, if Sean Payton wants to be the next guy running the Chargers, that'll happen. Brandon Staley will not be an obstacle.
Hey, look, Herbert's offensive line fell apart. They retooled a highly paid defense that never lived up to its bargain, obviously. And Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, to me, well, they only play 3-4 games together all year. They got Eckler. I mean, you got a stud running back. You got a stud quarterback.
They have pieces. They don't have all the pieces. And they've also got this mental block that goes back just almost a quarter century. I don't know if you saw the story in The Athletic today that rounded up the 24, not The Athletic, The Ringer, the 24 most disastrous Chargers losses simply since 2002.
Ooh.
And they found 24 of them. You don't even need to know what they are, but I read the whole story, and they are all spectacular failures. I mean, you're averaging at least one a year. In fact, one year where they had four in four consecutive weeks. So, you know, Sean Payton could come in and go, you know what? That wasn't on my watch. We're not going to be those guys anymore. And I think he could pull it off, because when he took the Saints job, they were like that too.
Let me tell you who we got coming up next. We turn our full attention to 49ers and Cowboys with a man who is all things sports in Dallas, a columnist for the Dallas Morning News. He's a regular panelist on ESPN's Around the Horn as well. Tim Cowlishaw used to be boys with Ratto back in their newspaper, ink-stained wretch days. So
the man's a bum.
He's joining us next here on 95.7 The Game. We're looking forward to it. By the way, the merch store is open. The Relevant T-shirt, it's actually really, really good. 95.7thegameshop.com. We're also brought to you by Pfizer.
Back to Damon and Ratto on 95.7 The Game.
It is fantastic to have you here today. Thanks so much for stopping on by. We got 49ers and Cowboys for the right to appear in the NFC title game. It doesn't get much bigger than that in playoff football. And to talk about it, to get you ready for this matchup, we're very happy to welcome in Tim Cowlishaw. He joins the show on the Bud Light guest line. Bud Light, easy to drink, easy to enjoy, as is Tim Cowlishaw. Still in the Dallas Morning News, still a regular panelist on ESPN's Around the Horn, and still someone who actually had to sit next to Ratto back in the days of typewriters and such, when he was with the Merc and Ray was with the Chronicle. And what you used to have to jostle for position around which Giants managers? Was it Frank Robinson back in the day?
No, Roger Craig.
I was only there for Roger Craig, but it was a cozy little press box at Candlestick.
It certainly was. Well, any room that Ray is in, by definition, gets cozier. That's just the way it is. It gets warmer, gets fuzzier.
True.
He's the same guy that you remember. Still the same big ball of just hugs and kisses for everyone.
Loves everything. Loves everything and everybody.
Okay, I think we're done with this guy.
It is. It's good to have you on, Tim. Thanks so much. Let's just start with the skinny of Dak Prescott, who to me was playing this year sort of backwards, right? He started well, got hurt, came back in, and then it looked like, you know, the best of his year might have been behind him right until last night. When did Dak just play the best game he's ever played in the NFL?
Well, he played the best big game he's ever played in the NFL, and it was probably his best game. I mean, he used to throw for 400 yards almost routinely when they had three good receivers. But this year, things had gone off the rails, and this came from out of nowhere. Yeah, I mean, you saw the first series of the game. They punted 13 seconds into the game. That had to be an NFL record to get three incompletions that quickly. And it was not a great start, but after that, almost everything he did was right. And somehow they turned the clock back to 2 months ago when they beat Minnesota 40-3. That team hadn't really been seen since then, but Dak and all of them showed up last night.
What, after 18 games now, can you say without fail, other than Micah Parsons, that they do really well every week? What's the best part of what they do, and what's the thing that has to worry the 49ers the most?
Well, that's an interesting question to pose it that way, because they had had breakdowns in really everything, every way you measure a team. The running game has still gone to pot, and it was okay last night. Zeke's half dead, but Pollard's pretty good and looked better last night. The passing game obviously was tremendous last night, but that hasn't been the case week after week. But they're mostly good against good teams. I think they did a lot of sleepwalking against Houston and Indianapolis and then Washington. And that's not really excusable, but they knew where they were going, and they knew they weren't going to catch the Eagles. They rushed the passer well, as you said, Parsons, every week. Now, some teams make that somewhat irrelevant by running the hell out of the ball, and that's something the 49ers will try to do and can do, and it's something Tampa Bay can't even come close to doing, and that made a miserable night for Brady. But other than the pass rush, that's the only thing they do consistently well, because, I mean, they gave up 355 yards passing to Gardner Minshew, so they can be picked apart while they're trying to get after the passer.
Tim Kalishaw here on Damon and Ratto. So, you know, Dallas last night basically knew that Tampa wasn't even going to try to run the ball, so they just played like two deep all night long, everything underneath fine, nothing up top, and we should be good. And they left a light box up front. If you want to talk about how you cannot play against the 49ers, it would be just that. If you're going to leave a light box, well, Christian McCaffrey and Deebo Samuel and Elijah Mitchell are going to go run for 220 yards at the very least on Sunday. Who knows what else happens in the game, but I can guarantee you a huge rushing day against the Dallas Cowboys if that's the way they're going to play. So how much, when they have a serious run-first problem, can they meet that problem straight ahead?
Well, that's a good question, because most time they did not meet that problem. And even Tampa Bay, Leonard Fournette's only 100-yard game this year was against Dallas in week one. So I think Tampa Bay hoped they could still run the ball a little, and they found out quickly they couldn't. Obviously, San Francisco can. Clearly, that's going to be a different defense and a lot more single coverage on receivers to try to deal with that running game. And, you know, I don't think it's a great matchup for Dallas by any means. I think San Francisco is a little better team than they are. They're certainly a hotter team the way they've been playing. But I think they have to make, you know, Brock Purdy. It seems like if you can shut down Tom Brady, you ought to be able to do something to Brock Purdy. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe he's the greatest Cyclone quarterback of all time, and I missed the boat here. But they need to rattle him. They need to get him to turn the ball over once or twice, or they're in big trouble.
Mike McCarthy has always been sort of a figure of fun, even when he was winning a Super Bowl in Green Bay.
Define fun.
Well, someone you laugh at.
Okay, that kind of fun. All right.
Yeah.
Just making sure.
Yeah. Is he really that bad a coach? Or are there things that he could actually do on Sunday that would confuse Kyle Shanahan? Or does it make any difference what the coaches do?
We probably overstate that all the time, as you know, and you've talked about and written about. You know, he looked like a terrible coach when he got here. And he brought in a name you're familiar with, Mike Nolan, as his defensive coordinator. And that was just a disaster. And so they had to fix things for him, and they brought in Dan Quinn, and Dan Quinn has been really good as a coordinator. Offensively, it's hard to tell how much McCarthy really does with Kellen Moore and people. I think he's got the kind of personality that makes it very easy to assume he's doing nothing. I don't think that's the case. I think the players respect him, and I think. I think he gets a lot out of this team. I think the talent on this team is sometimes overstated a little bit. I don't know that they'll do anything to surprise San Francisco. They'll you know, they led the league in takeaways. They're not as good defensively as the 49ers, but they do occasionally make, in the midst of playing average, they'll come up with two or three surprise interceptions, and that's I mean, that's not a game plan. That's just something that happens, and the way they cover guys, and you know, it's kind of on Diggs and the secondary to make that happen, to give them a chance.
Tim Kalishaw covers Dallas sports better than anyone, joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Really? Is the demise of Ezekiel Elliott exaggerated or actually something to report here? Is he that much less of a player, or are we just watching Tony Pollard emerge as that much more of a player?
Well, I mean, if it's exaggerated, I've been writing a lot of columns that make no sense at all. Because, I mean, it's been clear for 2 or 3 years, and in every conceivable way, you can look at numbers simply or with more of a microscope. Pollard is a much better runner. They keep Zeke around. They like Zeke. Players like Zeke. But there's nothing worse than a 1st-and-10 handoff to Zeke. When you've got CeeDee Lamb and you've got Schultz and you've got Pollard and people to do things, and to settle on a 2 or 3 yard run by Zeke. And Kellen Moore loves to do it like 4 times a game, even when they need, you know, to change the momentum a little bit. So I don't think it's a shock. He's played 7 years. They used the hell out of him his first 3 or 4 years. So he averaged 3.9 yards a carry this year. He doesn't have any kind of burst to get away from anybody. Pollard does, and Pollard needs to have 20 carries or 20 touches, whatever you want to give him, for this team to try to do something Sunday.
Put a percentage on it for me. What are the chances of the Cowboys rolling into Levi Stadium with a new kicker?
I think it's zero. I mean, and I just don't think they're inclined to make a change. I know, I mean, there's nothing, well, it was historic. I mean, nobody has ever missed 4 in a row, and it was really 5 because he missed their only extra point in Washington the previous week. So a guy who routinely makes 55-yard field goals lost his way. I can't think of, there can't be a more historical bad matchup than, what is Robbie Gould's status?
He is a perfect 25
playoff field goal.
Yeah, perfect 25 of 25 on field goals and 38 of 38 on points after touchdown in his postseason career.
And the other guy just missed 4 extra points. So if it comes down to kicking, Dallas is in trouble once again. They were going to have to, I would suspect, after one miss, they will go for 2 the rest of the day. I don't think they'll keep trotting him out there like they did last night, but I don't think they'll change. I think they think that would be even, you know, you bring in somebody off the streets and he misses 2 field goals, and I think that might look even worse. But it's a terrible problem to have.
Okay, without saying the word multiple turnover, the phrase multiple turnovers, what's Dallas's best chance to win on Sunday?
The best chance is that, I mean, Dak is honestly a better quarterback than Brock Purdy. That has to be true. I know Brock's 6-0, but I don't know that Dallas defense, again, you know, their pass rush is really good. Some of the other parts of the defense are hit and miss, but Dak was 25-33. If you think about the first half of the Seattle game, and all of a sudden it's tied, and Geno Smith is making plays. Well, Dak can make any plays that Geno Smith can make, so, I mean, I would like to think that. So, I mean, Dak has to have probably a 300-yard game. I don't think the Cowboys will run consistently. I think Pollard will have a couple decent runs, but against the 49ers, they're not going to do anything consistently. But I think they will try to make more plays down the field, and whether it's making plays against Ward or whatever, they will try to open things up, and that's probably how they're going to have to do it, and get, I'd say, 2 interceptions or 2 turnovers from the 49er offense.
The last meeting, Tim, between these two was a wild card win at Jerry World last postseason for the 49ers, with Dak famously scrambling up the middle and the clock running out on the Cowboys season. Besides Amari Cooper's departure, what is actually the biggest difference between this team and the one that the Niners beat last year?
I would say the difference is that lineman who wouldn't get his ass out of the way on that snap probably won't be at the game. Line judge, sorry, not lineman. whoever he was, that was slow to get out of the
Yeah, it was his fault. It was definitely his fault. That was a great play.
He was in the way a little too long. It was poorly run by the Cowboys, but that guy is supposed to get his ass through there a little quicker.
What if I told you he had a free bowl of Chipino waiting for him at Tadish for the rest of his life? Was there a conspiracy now?
I'm sure he did, and a big loaf of sourdough bread. I would say they're just... Pollard's a better player than he was a year ago. Their offensive line is better this year. Tyler Smith is actually very good for a rookie. And last night, the offensive line, I think, showed it. Dak had all day to throw. So if they can hold off Bosa in that pass rush a little bit, that gives them a chance. But they're a better overall offensive line, and they're more consistent with the pressure they get on quarterbacks, even when they don't get sacks. I think they finished third in sacks, but they slowed down in sacks at the end of the year. They still got a lot of pressure. So they're better up front in both areas, but they're only marginally a better team. And to me, the 49ers look like they're maybe significantly better because of McCaffrey and the healthy people they have around this time.
If the 49ers win this game, how quickly will the talking point in Dallas be? Well, they had more time to prepare. The Cowboys were at a competitive disadvantage based on a Saturday game against a Monday night game.
I've already made that point for tomorrow, and I don't usually homer it up, but it is absurd. Like last year, okay, the Rams and Arizona played the Monday night game. So the two Saturday games were AFC, which is what you got to do. You can't set it up where... Let's put this team in the first game Saturday, and with only one minor upset, Giants over Vikings, they're going to be playing the team playing Monday night and have to travel. It's one of those things the Cowboys can't really complain about because you got to go play the game. But it's kind of silly that there's an easy fix to keep from teams having a 2.5-day disadvantage, and the league either didn't think about it or doesn't care. Now, having said that, the Cowboys get a tremendous advantage every season, and as I pointed out, they have never once played a Thursday night game, on the road after playing on Sunday. They've never done that in their history. Something every other team does, like once a year. So they usually get the scheduling breaks. This one's kind of silly by the league.
Where do you stand on Jerry Jones at being still incredibly relevant to running a team? Is he actually crazy like a fox in a weird way good at this, or is he really the man who might hold the team back more than anyone? How would you explain Jerry Jones to somebody who landed here today?
Wow, relevant is an interesting word to use to describe Jerry Jones. He is that, unfortunately. No, I don't think their system makes sense. I mean, he's tremendous. Tremendous businessman, makes all the money in the world for the league and for the Cowboys, but there's only one general manager and one whatever Stephen Jones title is, vice president of some baloney. Those are the only two people in the league that don't have to worry about getting fired if they have a bad year. 31 other GMs and assistant GM types have to worry about getting fired. That's never an issue here, and they'll be in play again next year. So I think the reason 31 other teams do it differently is because it makes sense. Having said that, I don't think their organization is the worst in the league. I think there are probably close to a dozen Arizona Cardinal type organizations that would be worse to try to win with. But it's an outdated way of doing things. His guru when he got into the league was Al Davis, and it was the wrong Al Davis. It wasn't the 70s Al Davis. It was more like the late 90s Al Davis. And so that's where the Cowboys are in how they function or don't function.
There we go. Now, to wrap things up, here is Ray Ratto with a heartfelt thank you for spending some of your time with us today and a goodbye. Ray, go ahead and send our learned guest off in a complimentary way, please.
Go away.
Go away, thanks. That's what I would expect. I thought maybe you'd tell me something about Bruce Bochy that would be good to know going into next year, but
Well, here's the deal.
You really think there's an open book there that hasn't been already read by everybody in the world? He doesn't change much.
There's got to be some dirty secrets about Bruce Buck Jesus.
He shot up a hospital in one of his off years, but that was it. They kept it quiet.
Here's the dirty secret. DeGrom's going to win another Cy Young under that guy. Nobody handles pitchers better than Bruce Bochy.
He can throw more than 140 innings, he might. But, that's a wildly different team that's borderline interesting now.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he'll win the Cy Young on a team that goes 73-89.
Yeah, that's fine. The Rangers have never had a Cy Young winner in 51 years, so that's probably good enough.
Thank you so much, Tim, for joining us. Appreciate your time.
Hey, thanks, guys. I'll see you out there, or see some of you, Sunday evening.
You got it. Ray makes no more personal appearances, not even for a personal appearance fee. I don't think Ray's going anywhere, but I'll thank you for coming on when I see you Sunday. Thank you so much, Tim.
All right, thank you.
Tim Kalishaw here on 95.7 The Game. Ray, again, Peter King is going. Your best buddy, Tim Kalishaw, is going. Why not put the whole band back together? Let's go together, you and me. Walk in there as a triumphant afternoon drive radio show and personally thank the contributors for an awesome year of you ready to hand out some bouquets and flowers?
An hour and a half drive to, an hour and a half drive from. And the in-game experience on my couch is light years better than the in-game experience in that press box. And in addition, I don't belong in a press box where I'm just sitting around. That's a place where people work, and I feel strongly about that.
Well, but you would actually be working because, you know, we're going to be talking about that game in vivid, granular detail all next week.
I'll probably watch it. I think I'll be able to pay attention.
You can DVR it and get whatever detail you might miss in real time, and you get to watch it twice then.
I can do that anyway. I can watch it at home, and then I can watch it again. If I were nuts enough to watch the game twice, I'll be fine. Don't worry about me. More press box food for you.
It's going to be a hell of a 95.7 presence out there, right? I'll be there. Pretty much someone representing every one of our shows will be out there. I think we're going to have a little pregame party. You want to come?
Well, you've convinced me. Perfect. I'm not leaving the house.
I've got good news for you, Ray. Maybe the perfect spot for you to land when it's all said and done.
My car's been towed?
No. This is bigger and better than that. I read today that the moon, might have caves. They have identified a lunar reconnaissance orbiter has sent images back to NASA that the moon may have caves, and these caves could become possible astronaut habitats. Scientists have discovered that parts of these pits are always around 63 degrees Fahrenheit, which means not only are they livable to the naked flesh should you lose all heating and power. Well, if you lose power, you're going to lose oxygen, so then you're in trouble.
Yeah.
But the machines that will provide you the oxygen will run better in a much more hospitable temperature. So, Ray, the possibility of you living in a cave by yourself someday on the moon could possibly be out there for you. Wouldn't you be excited?
You've given my wife reason to go on.
Ray's on the moon?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. If I'm on another planet, she's calling the caterer immediately.
But you, in a weird way, would also be calling a celebratory caterer that delivered to the moon, because that's where you are now. But wouldn't you love
an existence
under yourself? Don't you think the pizza
get a cold about halfway over?
Well, we actually have a story about how in a world of innovation, there's really been no innovation to the pizza delivery box. Don't you think maybe this is somewhere where you could make your next multi-million dollar deal? Why don't you reinvent the pizza box to keep pizza hot and fresh as it gets delivered to your cave on the moon?
Then you know what you have? You have a $20 pizza and an $8,000 carrying case.
But for the right pizza.
Yeah, $8,000 for a pizza. It better be able to cook itself and then read Hamlet.
All prices go up with moon deliveries. I think that's pretty
obvious. I think it's, yeah.
I think that's
They don't call it Cave Dash.
Look at you, painting in the now. Ray Ratto and Tim Kalishaw. It's the type of chemistry that you can't find anywhere else but here on 95.7 The Game. That was good, though. I'm glad that we got to Tim because he gave us an awful lot. It doesn't sound like he's given the Dallas Cowboys much of a shot to come in here and find a win.
No, he'll give you a square count on what he thinks of the Cowboys. And in Dallas, I think after so many years of Jerry Jones, that most of the people there, from what little research I've done, they're not expecting this to end well. I think they said they had significant hopes that they could beat Tampa, because Tampa is not very good. But I think they're looking at the 49ers as a far more difficult nut to crack. And beyond that, I don't think they're as down on the players as much as you might think. But I think they are getting sick of Jerry, because Jerry has produced damn little for the amount of words he's thrown into the air over the decades. He talks it, and when it comes to putting franchises in different cities and making sure that he gets a cut of every move, he's still the best there is. But as a football mind, he could work for the Bears.
We're going to hear from Kyle Shanahan in his conference call that he had yesterday, some things that he had to say about the game that was played, about the game that's coming up, a little advice for D'Amico Ryans as he goes on several head coaching interviews this week, or they come to him virtually. I would certainly hope either that or Jed flipped him the keys to the private plane to make travel easy, if that's indeed part of the interviewing process. We have our longest commercial-free segment of the entire day. It will be spectacular. You will laugh. You will cry. It is better than Cats. Damon and Ratto here on 95.7 The Game, brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full-service banking, no compromises.
Damon and Ratto on 95.7 The Game.
Thanks again to Tim Kalishaw for joining us on the Bud Light guest line. Great stuff out of him. If you missed any of that, you can find it on the Odyssey app. Of course, Ray and I are all over the YouTube page. It's good to have you on the page. Good to have you on the stream. Good to have you on the text line. Good to have you here on 95.7 The Game. And we got a lot of stuff to get into in what is the longest commercial-free segment of the entire afternoon. The Road to Glendale is brought to you by Merriwest. Merriwest Credit Union, working for you today, tomorrow, together. All of that is happening as we get you ready for 49ers and Cowboys, man. For the right to appear in the NFC title game. Somebody on the Otis Bird III YouTube page text line says, you know, Tim Kalishaw keeping expectations low. San Jose Jazz fan says, is he trying to pull a Pete Carroll on us? Well, no, he doesn't work for the team. He's not representing the Dallas Cowboys. He's representing his own opinion. And one of the reasons why his opinion in Dallas matters about sports is because he's going to give you the old what fur. He's not going to give you the Homer answer. And the truth is the 49ers are favored in this game. They're favored, rightfully so. They're favored because they've got the defense that can slow down the offense that you saw Tampa be able to do very little against last night, all things considered. 49ers minus 3.5. Let's get to the real nitty-gritty here, Ray. 49ers minus 3.5. The over-under is 46. I like the 49ers to cover, and I think I would play the under.
I thought the under would be good last week, too, and I got my hat blocked. So I'm going to lay off of that. But I do know that there has been early Dallas money coming in because it opened at 4.5, and they let the wise guys bet into that. They drove it down to 3.5 where it sits now. It may go back up a little bit because public money tends to come in late, but this looks like probably a game that, you know, you would like the 49ers more to cover, just because I don't know how Dallas scores more than 17. That's the thing that I can't get away from, because while Dalton Schultz is a hell of a receiver, I don't think he's a guy that's going to command two guys. I don't know that C.D. Lamb is such a dynamic player that you've got to cover him with two. And it does sound, at least according to Tim, like they still have a thing for Zeke Elliott that is not justified by the numbers. So I think they might have trouble getting up and down the field in a way that they didn't last night.
And the 49ers can take away things that Tampa simply could not take away. And as Tim Kalishaw just said, he's not sure that the Dallas Cowboys can take away what the 49ers are going to want to do, and that is run the football straight down their throats. That's a hard thing to take away for teams that are good at stopping the run. Nobody said the Dallas Cowboys are good at stopping the run this year. So that is the advantage that the 49ers have, and if they want to load the box in order to take that advantage away, well, now you turn to Brock Purdy. And the one thing that, God bless Tim Kalishaw, where he, you know, he said something that I don't know if you can just say it out loud. It seems like the right thing to say, given the fact that experience matters and tasting playoff football matters, and Dak has tasted it more often than Brock Purdy has, but not dramatically much more. And I'm going to tell you, last night, Dak Prescott, he threw one more touchdown, or accounted for one more touchdown than Brock Purdy did, but otherwise Brock Purdy had maybe even a better day than what Dak Prescott had in what could have been the best game he's ever played. To say that Dak Prescott has got to be the best quarterback on that field by theoretical default, I understand why Tim said that. But by actual practice and naked eye tests, I don't know if I could just agree to that right now. You know, the more talent, more arm talent, all right, if that's the way you want to measure it, maybe. But I have seen nothing out of Brock Purdy to start listing the things that he is not good at or doesn't do well ahead of anybody in this league, because I don't even think we know yet.
Well, we don't know. And what I took away from what he said was that Dak Prescott has to be better for them to win. That I agree with. He's got to be as good, if not better, than he was last night, because Tampa didn't offer much resistance at any point. And, I mean, Schultz was wide open all night long. And it's not like he's a secret. It's not like he hasn't done stuff like this during the regular season. He's a guy you know you have to guard.
Yeah.
And they didn't, and he was open, and they had a field day. Now, the 49ers can probably take some of that stuff away, but if they take a lot of it away, then Dak Prescott can't be the better quarterback on Sunday. And if he's not the better quarterback on Sunday, like I said, I don't know how they get more than 17.
It's going to be a huge, huge uphill battle for a team that got everything they wanted last night out of a game plan to get the same thing out of a game plan against the 49ers defense. The amount of talent on Dallas's offense is, I think, considerable. Tim Kalishaw even said maybe a touch overrated, but the talent that the 49ers have on their defensive side of the football just means that they're going to make life so much harder for Dak Prescott and company than Tampa Bay was able to do last night. There's no doubt about that in my mind. I don't think there's any doubt about that in anyone in Dallas's mind. They're going to have to, it feels like, they're going to be held against that level of perfect standard that I don't know if the 49ers need to play a perfect game to beat them. And I'm not trying to go pie in the sky. The Niners are that much better, because as we've also demonstrated, the difference between the best team in football and the worst team in football is a smaller gap than anything else. The 49ers and Cowboys, this is a fair fight, without a doubt.
No, I think it's a fair fight. I think the one thing that the 49ers are vulnerable, where the one place where they are vulnerable, is in pass defense. Against the run, they're second in football. So I don't know that introducing every series with a handoff to Ezekiel Elliott is a grand strategy, because all you're doing is guaranteeing yourself second and nine. The Cowboys will have to be more dynamic offensively, and they will have to figure out a way to stop the 49ers from running the ball, and they are at best an average defense against the run. There's nothing special about what they do or how they do it. So they do have to be close to perfect. I think the 49ers, as long as they maintain their possessions, they don't have to be. They can punt the ball away a few times and get away with it. I think Dallas's efficiency is that they need to be able to have long, concerted drives and get something out of them. I'm not worried about Brett Maher. I think he'll be fine on Sunday. But I think the Cowboys have to figure out a way to have the ball a lot longer than the 49ers do. And I'm not sure that they're capable of that.
I don't think that they are either. I mean, to me, Kyle Shanahan is going to have an opportunity to get his, you know, to hit the numerical goals that he just writes down on the whiteboard before every single game. He's going to want his 20-plus first downs. He's going to want his 30-plus carries. He's going to want his more than 150 rushing yards. I think he gets those things against Dallas. And that goes a long way to delivering the 49ers into the win column.
Oh, he'll run a minimum of 30 times. I don't think there's any question. But the one problem that I see that they could have is if they either they turn the ball over three or four times minimum, or they can't get the Cowboys offense off the field. And I think it's not likely that they'll be able to do that, but if the Cowboys can maintain possession and have the ball 36, 37 minutes, I think they've got a counterpuncher's chance.
Sure. I mean, if the best defense in football has its worst afternoon outside of the Raiders game and the Chiefs game, things get more difficult. And but, if they start coughing up the football left and right, yeah.
But if they only score 20, but they have the ball the whole day, that gets it done just as well. So it's not about putting up a ton of points as much as it is not letting the 49er offense on the field long enough to do stuff. They have to get ahead early. They have to stay ahead, and not just by a point like Seattle. They've got to be up like 17-7 at the break and then make Kyle Shanahan punch uphill.
From the Xfinity Mobile text line, do you guys think the 49ers should run at or away from Micah Parsons? I think you got to find a balance there. I think you got to kind of use his aggressiveness against him the same way that some of the best game plans against Nick Bosa used his aggressiveness against him. I think you got to run into the space that his pass rush creates and fool him a little bit. The thing is Micah Parsons is the real deal. Every bit of the real deal defensive player Nick Bosa is. And he needs to be accounted for at all times. There is no denying that he is a level of difference maker that can change the way a football game comes out in the wash. So that's job one all day long offensively. Where's Micah Parsons? And then we'll deal with the 10 other guys around him.
I think they have to do that, but I don't think they're going to change how they run the football because of him. Simply because I believe they think they can run the ball on anybody, Micah Parsons or no, because Micah Parsons, as good as he is only one of 11. And there are other places to run. You can run at him if you think he's going to try to, you know, bull rush inside or, you know, try to take a wide path. I don't think they're going to make any special.
Did you almost say wide nine? Did you almost go full on NFL lingo?
I did
not. A wide nine?
No.
You almost did. You thought about it.
I did not. I was looking for the right word, and it wasn't nine. I don't think they're going to worry that much about Micah Parsons. Not in a way that says we have to run away from him because he's too fearsome. They've run the ball on everybody. So I don't know if they're going to make special plans for him.
Look, DeMarcus Lawrence is good. Haskins is good. Anthony Barr is pretty good. Leighton Van Der Esch is pretty good. They got a good defense.
But I think they're going to make them prove it on against the run, because that defense is much better against the pass because they've got guys who can rush. I don't know.
Now back to Damon and Ratto on 95.7 The Game.
Thanks again to Tim Kalishaw for joining us on the Bud Light guest line. Great stuff out of him. If you missed any of that, you can find it on the Odyssey app. Of course, Ray and I are all over the YouTube page. It's good to have you on the page. Good to have you on the stream. Good to have you on the text line. Good to have you here on 95.7 The Game. And we got a lot of stuff to get into in what is the longest commercial-free segment of the entire afternoon. afternoon. The Road to Glendale is brought to you by Merriwest. Merriwest Credit Union working for you today, tomorrow, together. All of that is happening as we get you ready for 49ers and Cowboys, man. For the right to appear in the NFC title game. Somebody on the Otis Bird III YouTube page text line says, you know, Tim Kalishaw keeping expectations low. San Jose Jazz fan says, is he trying to pull a Pete Carroll on us? Well, no, he doesn't work for the team. He's not representing the Dallas Cowboys. He's representing his own opinion. And one of the reasons why his opinion in Dallas matters about sports is because he's going to give you the old what for. He's not going to give you the homer answer. And the truth is the 49ers are favored in this game. They're favored, rightfully so. They're favored because they've got the defense that can slow down the offense that you saw Tampa be able to do very little against last night, all things considered. 49ers minus 3.5. Let's get to the real nitty-gritty here, Ray. 49ers minus 3.5. The over-under is 46. I like the 49ers to cover, and I think I would play the under.
I thought the under would be good last week, too, and I got my hat blocked. So I'm going to lay off of that. But I do know that there has been early Dallas money coming in because it opened at 4.5, and they let the wise guys bet into that. They drove it down to 3.5 where it sits now. It may go back up a little bit because public money tends to come in late, but this looks like probably a game that, you know, you would like the 49ers more to cover just because I don't know how Dallas scores more than 17. That's the thing that I can't get away from, because while Dalton Schultz is a hell of a receiver, I don't think he's a guy that's going to command two guys. I don't know that C.D. Lamb is such a dynamic player that you've got to cover him with two. And it does sound, at least according to Tim, like they still have a thing for Zeke Elliott that is not justified by the numbers. So I think they might have trouble getting up and down the field in a way that they didn't last night.
And the 49ers can take away things that Tampa simply could not take away. And as Tim Kalishaw just said, he's not sure that the Dallas Cowboys can take away what the 49ers are going to want to do, and that is run the football straight down their throats. That's a hard thing to take away for teams that are good at stopping the run. Nobody said the Dallas Cowboys are good at stopping the run this year. So that is the advantage that the 49ers have. And if they want to load the box in order to take that advantage away, well, now you turn to Brock Purdy. And the one thing that, God bless Tim Kalishaw, where he, you know, he said something that I don't know if you can just say it out loud. It seems like the right thing to say, given the fact that experience matters and tasting playoff football matters, and Dak has tasted it more often than Brock Purdy has, but not dramatically much more. And I'm going to tell you, last night, Dak Prescott, he threw one more touchdown, or accounted for one more touchdown than Brock Purdy did. But otherwise, Brock Purdy had maybe even a better day. Maybe even a better day than what Dak Prescott had in what could have been the best game he's ever played. To say that Dak Prescott has got to be the best quarterback on that field by theoretical default, I understand why Tim said that. But by actual practice and naked eye tests, I don't know if I could just agree to that right now. You know, the more talent, more arm talent, all right, if that's the way you want to measure it, maybe. But I have seen nothing out of Brock Purdy to start listing the things that he is not good at or doesn't do well ahead of anybody in this league. Because I don't even think we know yet.
Well, we don't know. And what I took away from what he said was that Dak Prescott has to be better for them to win. That I agree with. He's got to be as good, if not better, than he was last night, because Tampa didn't offer much resistance at any point. And, I mean, Schultz was wide open all night long. And it's not like he's a secret. It's not like he hasn't done stuff like this during the regular season. He's a guy you know you have to guard.
Yeah.
And they didn't, and he was open, and they had a field day. Now, the 49ers can probably take some of that stuff away But if they take a lot of it away, then Dak Prescott can't be the better quarterback on Sunday. And if he's not the better quarterback on Sunday, like I said, I don't know how they get more than 17.
It's going to be a huge, huge uphill battle for a team that got everything they wanted last night out of a game plan to get the same thing out of a game plan against the 49ers defense. The amount of talent on Dallas's offense is, I think, considerable. Tim Kalishaw even said maybe a touch overrated, but the talent that the 49ers have on their defensive side of the football just means that they're going to make life so much harder for Dak Prescott and company than Tampa Bay was able to do last night. There's no doubt about that in my mind. I don't think there's any doubt about that in anyone in Dallas's mind. They're going to have to, it feels like, they're going to be held against that level of perfect standard that I don't know if the 49ers need to play a perfect game to beat them. I'm not trying to go pie in the sky. The Niners are that much better because, as we've also demonstrated, the difference between the best team in football and the worst team in football is a smaller gap than anything else. The 49ers and Cowboys, this is a fair fight, without a doubt.
No, I think it's a fair fight. I think the one thing that the 49ers are vulnerable, where the one place where they are vulnerable, is in pass defense. Against the run, they're second in football. So I don't know that introducing every series with a handoff to Ezekiel Elliott is a grand strategy, because all you're doing is guaranteeing yourself second and nine. The Cowboys will have to be more dynamic offensively, and they will have to figure out a way to stop the 49ers from running the ball, and they are at best an average defense against the run. There's nothing special about what they do or how they do it. So they do have to be close to perfect. I think the 49ers, as long as they maintain their possessions, they don't have to be. They can punt the ball away a few times and get away with it. I think Dallas's efficiency is that they need to be able to have long, concerted drives and get something out of them. I'm not worried about Brett Maher. I think he'll be fine on Sunday. But I think the Cowboys have to figure out a way to have the ball a lot longer than the 49ers do. And I'm not sure that they're capable of that.
I don't think that they are either. I mean, to me, Kyle Shanahan is going to have an opportunity to get his, you know, to hit the numerical goals that he just writes down on the whiteboard before every single game. He's going to want his 20-plus first downs. He's going to want his 30-plus carries. He's going to want his more than 150 rushing yards. I think he gets those things against Dallas. And that goes a long way to delivering the 49ers into the win column.
Oh, he'll run a minimum of 30 times. I don't think there's any question. But the one problem that I see that they could have is if they turn the ball over three or four times, minimum, or they can't get the Cowboys' offense off the field. And I think it's not likely that they'll be able to do that, but if the Cowboys can maintain possession and have the ball 36, 37 minutes, I think they've got a counterpuncher's chance.
Sure. I mean, if the best defense in football has its worst afternoon outside of the Raiders game and the Chiefs game, things get more difficult. But if they start coughing up the football left and right,
But if they only score 20, but they have the ball the whole day, that gets it done just as well. So it's not about putting up a ton of points as much as it is not letting the 49er offense on the field long enough to do stuff. They have to get ahead early. They have to stay ahead, and not just by a point like Seattle. They've got to be up like 17-7 at the break and then make Kyle Shanahan punch uphill.
From the Xfinity Mobile text line, do you guys think the 49ers should run at or away from Micah Parsons? I think you got to find a balance there. I think you got to kind of use his aggressiveness against him the same way that some of the best game plans against Nick Bosa used his aggressiveness against him. I think you got to run into the space that his pass rush creates and fool him a little bit. The thing is Micah Parsons is the real deal. Every bit of the real deal defensive player Nick Bosa is. And he needs to be accounted for at all times. There is no denying that he is a level of difference maker that can change the way a football game comes out in the wash. So that's job one all day long offensively. Where's Micah Parsons? And then we'll deal with the 10 other guys around him.
I think they have to do that, but I don't think they're going to change how they run the football because of him. Simply because I believe they think they can run the ball on anybody, Micah Parsons or no, because Micah Parsons, as good as he is only one of 11. And there are other places to run. You can run at him if you think he's going to try to, you know, bull rush inside or, you know, try to take a wide path. I don't think they're going to make any special.
Did you almost say wide nine? Did you almost go full on NFL lingo?
I did
not. Drop a wide nine?
No.
You almost did. You thought about it.
I did not. I was looking for the right word, and it wasn't nine. I don't think they're going to worry. I don't think they're going to worry that much about Micah Parsons. Not in a way that says we have to run away from him because he's too fearsome. They've run the ball on everybody, so I don't know if they're going to make special plans for him.
Look, DeMarcus Lawrence is good. Haskins is good. Anthony Barr is pretty good. Leighton Vander Esch is pretty good. They got a good defense.
I think they're going to make him prove it on against the run because that defense is much better against the pass because they've got guys who can rush. I don't know how well they can plug gaps.
I mean, are you going to get the best out of Trayvon Diggs? Or are you going to get the worst out of Trayvon Diggs? Because it feels like there's two different players waiting to happen on any particular Sunday in Trayvon Diggs. Sometimes he looks unbeatable. Other times, he has proven himself to be quite beatable. By the way, let's prove ourselves here in Afternoon Drive. Welcome, everyone, to your 5 o'clock hour.